Welcome to the crimson and gilt magnificence of the Royal Albert Hall, a protean place that so far in this prom season has convincingly impersonated the London of My Fair Lady, fairy tale France for Pelléas et Mélisande, and ancient Troy for, yes, you guessed it, the Trojans, as well as making an appearance last Sunday in the closing ceremony of the 2012 Olympics. Tonight's leap of the imagination is only a short hop eastwards from Kensington Gore. In celebration of the extraordinary summer our capital city is enjoying, we're off to the Tower of London, with a starry cast of soloists, the BBC singers, the BBC concert orchestra and conductor Jane Glover, for a semi-stage performance of Gilbert and Sullivan's opera The Yeoman of the Guard, or The Merry Man and His Maid. As always with Gilbert and Sullivan, there are glorious tunes, pointed satire and a topsy-turvy plot. But despite that subtitle, it's the darkest of their operas. By the time all the entanglements are finally unravelled, we're left with one true love match, two rather forced betrothals, and a broken-hearted jester. Here's tonight's conductor, Jane Glover.
It is actually quite a dark piece, quite apart from the broken-hearted jester, who does he die at the end of it, or does he just pass out? But his heart is broken. But quite apart from him and his sad little journey, we also have quite a lot of talk about death all the way through. I mean, the Omen talk about dying for each other. Fairfax comes in with this great aria, Is Life a Boon? It's effectively a suicide aria. He's deciding, well, what's the purpose of living? Should I just, to be or not to be? This is Fairfax's Hamlet moment. And so there are these wonderful, real sort of dark, soft underbellies to what is effectively still a gloriously bouncy and hilarious, seriously jolly, fun piece. And there's always a little strain of that wistfulness in Sullivan and even in Gilbert. But here I think we get quite a lot more of it. And I think we're trying to hold on to these moments of wistfulness and deliver those as well as the jollity. This is actually only my third Gilbert and Sullivan, so I can't claim to be a specialist at this stuff at all. But I must say, it's always such a joy and delight to come to this stuff. And I think the secret of it, really, is to take it immensely seriously and really respect, you know, all the dynamics and all the markings and all the instructions that Sullivan as a composer gives you. And then having sort of paid attention to all that, then just go in and have a rollicking good time. And that's what I intend to do tonight.
Wise words from Jane Glover, who seemed to be having pretty good time in rehearsal earlier on today. The action of the Yeomen of the Guard takes place in the Tower of London in Shakespearean times, so before the lights go down, I'll set the scene for Act One. Brave Colonel Fairfax is held in the tower, facing imminent beheading for practising alchemy. It's a trumped-up charge organised by his evil cousin, so in order to avoid said cousin inheriting his estate, Fairfax has a cunning plan. He'll pay someone to marry him, and within an hour, she'll be his legitimate widow. Fairfax has won all hearts since being put in the tower, and while trusty Sergeant Merrill and his son Leonard hatch their own plan to help Fairfax escape his fate, Merrill's daughter Phoebe is in the throes of a gigantic crush on the doomed prisoner. A roistering throng, now where would G&S be without one of those, comes on pursuing a pair of itinerant entertainers, jester Jack Point and singer Elsie Maynard. Elsie willingly agrees to become Fairfax's very short-term wife, and she's blindfolded and led to his cell. Once the wedding is complete, it's execution time, but there's a big surprise coming, courtesy of the Merrill family. Fairfax, disguised as Leonard Merrill, rushes in to report that the prisoner has escaped. Well, not rushing in just there was Charles Mutter, the leader, and now here is Jane Glover coming on stage to conduct the BBC singers and the BBC concert orchestra in Act One of Yeoman of the Guard. After the overture, an imaginary curtain rises to reveal the lovelorn Phoebe Merrill at her spinning wheel.
Thank you. When maiden love she mocks apart as owl mocks on a tree. Although she keenly feels the smart, she cannot tell what ails her heart with its sad me. Tis but a foolish sigh.
Mistress Merrill?
Oh, it's you, is it? You may go away if you like, because I don't want you, you know.
Haven't you anything to say to me?
Oh, yes. Are the birds all caged? The wild beasts all littered down? All the locks, chains, bars and bolts in good order? Is the little ease sufficiently uncomfortable? The racks, pincers and thumbscrews all ready for work. Ooh, you brute.
These allusions to my professional duties are in doubtful taste. I didn't become a head jailer because I like head jailing. I didn't become an assistant tormentor because I like assistant tormenting. We can't all be sorcerers, you know. Ha, you brought that on yourself.
Colonel Fairfax is not a sorcerer. He's a man of science and an alchemist.
Well, whatever he is, he won't be one long. He's to be beheaded today for dealings with the devil. His master nearly had him last night when the fire broke out in the Beecham Tower.
Oh, how I wish he had escaped in the confusion. But take care. There's still time for a reply to his petition for mercy.
I'm content to chance that. This evening at 7:30. Ha!
You're a cruel monster to speak so unfeelingly of the death of a young and handsome soldier.
Young and handsome? How do you know he's young and handsome?
Because I've seen him every day these weeks past, taking his exercise on the Beecham Tower.
Curse him!
There! I believe you're jealous of him now. Jealous of a man I've never even spoken to. Jealous of a poor soul who's to die in an hour.
I am. I'm jealous of everybody and everything. I'm jealous of the very words I speak to you, for they reach your ears, and I mustn't go near them.
How unjust you are. Jealous of the words you speak to me. You know as well as I do, I don't even like them.
You used to like them?
I used to pretend to like them. It was mere politeness to comparative strangers.
I don't believe you know what jealousy is. I don't believe you know how it eats into a man's heart and disorders his digestion and turns his interior into boiling lead. You are a heartless jade to trifle with the delicate organisation of the human interior.
Thank you. not so spent, and the days are not so faded, but that we with one consent were our loved land invaded, still would face a foreign foe, as in days of long ago,
Dame Carruthers. Busy today?
Busy, aye. The fire in the Beecham last night has given me work enough. A dozen poor prisoners. Richard Colfax, Sir Martin Byfleet, Colonel Fairfax, Warren the preacher poet, and half a score others, all packed into one small cell not 6 feet square. Poor Colonel Fairfax, who's to die today, is to be removed to number 14 in the cold harbour, that he may have his last hour alone with his confessor. And I've to see to that.
Poor gentleman. He'll die bravely. I fought under him 2 years since, and he valued his life as it were a feather.
He's the bravest, the handsomest, and the best young gentleman in England. He twice saved my father's life. And it's a cruel thing, a wicked thing, and a barbarous thing that so gallant a hero should lose his head, for it's the handsomest head in England.
For dealings with the devil. Aye, if all were beheaded who dealt with him, there'd be busy doings on Tower Green.
You know very well that Colonel Fairfax is a student of alchemy, nothing more and nothing less. But this wicked tower, like a cruel giant in a fairy tale, must be fed with blood, and that blood must be the bravest and the best, or it's not good enough for the old blunderdore.
Oh. Silence, you silly girl. You know not what you say. I was born in the old keep, and I've grown grey in it, and please God I shall die and be buried in it. And there's not a stone in its walls that is not as dear to me as my own right hand.
It arose in its panoply of stone, a
but the grim old fortress takes a little heed of that that comes about in the measure of its duty. The screw may twist and the rag may turn, and men may bleed and men may burn, or London town and its golden horn. I keep my silent watch and ward.
May twist and the rack
or London town and all its
horn.
No, my lass, but there is one hope yet. Thy brother Leonard, who was a reward in saving his standard and cutting his way through 50 foes who would have hanged him, has been appointed a yeoman of the guard, will arrive this morning. And as he comes straight from Windsor, where the court is, it may be that he will bring the expected reprieve with him.
Oh, that he may.
Amen to that, for the colonel twice saved my life, and I'd give the rest of my life to save his. And wilt thou not be glad to welcome thy brave brother with the fame of whose exploits all England is a-ringing?
Aye, truly, if he brings the reprieve.
And not otherwise?
Well, he's a brave fellow indeed, and I like brave men.
All brave men?
Most of them, I verily believe. But I hope Leonard will not be too strict with me. They say he is a very dragoon of virtue and circumspection. Now, my dear old father is kindness itself, and
And leaves thee pretty well to thine own ways, eh? Well, I've no fears for thee. Thou hast a feather brain, but thou art a good lass.
Yes, that's all very well. But if Leonard is going to tell me that I may not do this and I may not do that, and I must not talk to this one or walk with that one, but go through the world with my lips pursed up and my eyes cast down, like a poor nun who has renounced mankind, why, as I have not renounced mankind and don't mean to renounce mankind, I won't have it. There.
Nay, he'll not check thee more than he's good for thee, Phoebe. He's a brave fellow and bravest among brave fellows. And yet it seems but yesterday that he robbed the lieutenant's orchard.
Father!
Leonard, my brave boy, I'm right glad to see thee. And so is Phoebe.
Hast thou brought Colonel Fairfax reprieve?
Nay. I have here a dispatch for the lieutenant, but no reprieve for the colonel.
Poor gentleman.
Aye.
Poor gentleman.
I would I had brought better news. I'd give my right hand, nay, my body, my life to save his.
Dost thou speak in earnest, my lad?
Aye, father. I'm no braggart. Did he not save thy life? And am I not his foster brother?
Then hearken to me. Thou hast come to join the yeoman of the guard.
Well?
None has seen thee but ourselves.
And a sentry who took but scant notice of me.
Now to prove thy words. Give me the dispatch and get thee hence at once. Here is money, and I'll send thee more. Lie hidden for a space and let no one know. I'll convey a suit of yeoman's uniform to the colonel's cell. He shall shave off his beard so that none shall know him. And I'll own him as my son, the brave Leonard Merrill, who saved his flag and fought his way through 50 foes who thirsted for his life. He will be welcomed here without question by my brother yeoman. I'll warrant that. Now, how to get access to the colonel's cell? The key is with thy sour-faced admirer, Wilfred Shadbolt.
I think I can get anything I want from Wilfred. I think you may leave that to me.
Then get thee hence at once, lad, and bless thee for this sacrifice.
And take my blessings too, dear Leonard.
And thine, eh? Thy lover's newborn. Wrap it up carefully, lest it take cold and die.
Alas, I waver to and fro. Dark danger hangs upon the deed.
Dark danger hangs upon the deed. A scheme is rash and well may fail, but ours are not the hearts that quail, the hands that shrink, the cheeks that pale in ours of need. No, ours are not the hearts that quail, the hands that shrink, the cheeks that pale, the hands that shrink, the cheeks that pale in ours of need.
The air I breathe to him I owe, my life is his, I count it not.
But life is his, who
can't
it not?
And shall I reck and risk I run when services are to be done to save the life of such an one? Unworthy thought, unworthy thought.
And shall I reck and risk we run to save the life of such an one? Unworthy thought, unworthy thought. We may succeed, who can foretell?
Be of good cheer, we may save him yet.
See, Father, they bring the poor gentleman from the Beecham. Oh, Father, his hour is not yet come.
No, they lead him to the Cold Harbour Tower to await his end in solitude. Oh. But softly the lieutenant approaches, he should not see thee weep.
Halt! Colonel Fairfax, my old friend, we meet but sadly.
Sir, I greet you with all goodwill, and I thank you for the zealous care with which you have guarded me from the pestilent dangers which threaten human life outside. In this happy little community, death, when he comes, doth so in punctual and businesslike fashion, and like a courtly gentleman, giveth due notice of his advent so that one may not be taken unawares.
Sir, you bear this bravely, as a brave man should.
Why, sir, 'tis no light boon to die swiftly and surely, at a given hour and in a given fashion. Truth to tell, I would gladly have my life. But if that may not be, I have the next best thing to it, which is death. Believe me, sir, my lot is not so much amiss.
My poor lass.
Nay, pretty one, why weepest thou? Come, be comforted. Such a life as mine is not worth weeping for. Sergeant Merrill, is it not? May I greet my old friend? Why, man, what's all this? Thou and I have faced the grim old king a dozen times, and never has his majesty come to me in such goodly fashion. Keep a stout heart, good fellow. We are soldiers, and we know how to die, thou and I. Truth to tell, it better to die than to live, for in sooth, I have tried both.
Is life a boon? If so, it must befall that death, whene'er he call, must call too soon. Though fourscore years he give, yet one would pray to live another moon. What kind of plaint have I, who perish in July, who perish in July? I might have had to die, perchance, in June. I might have had to die, perchance, in June. Is life a thong? Then count it not a whit. Nay, count it not a whit. The man is well done with it. Soon as he's born, he should the means essay to put the plague away. And I were one poor captured fugitive, my life most gladly. I might have had to live another morn. I might have had to live, another morn.
And now, Sir Richard, I have a boon to beg. I am in this strait for no better reason than because my kinsman, Sir Clarence Poultwhistle, one of the secretaries of state, has charged me with sorcery in order that he may succeed to my estate, which devolves to him, provided I die unmarried.
As thou wilt most surely do.
Nay, as I wilt most surely not do, by your worship's grace. I have a mind to thwart this good cousin of mine.
How?
By marrying forthwith, to be sure.
But heaven or mercy, whom wouldst thou marry?
Nay, I am indifferent on that score. Coming death hath made of me a true and chivalrous knight, who holds all womankind in such esteem that the oldest and the meanest and the least favored of them is good enough for him. So, my good lieutenant, if thou wouldst serve a poor soldier with but an hour to live, find me the first that comes. My confessor shall marry us, and her dow shall be my dishonored name, and 100 crowns to boot. No such poor dow for an hour of matrimony.
A strange request. I doubt I would be warranted in granting it.
There never was a marriage fraught with so little of evil to the contracting parties. In an hour, she'll be a widow, and I, a bachelor again, for aught I know.
Well, I will see what can be done, for I hold thy kinsman in abhorrence for the scurvy trick he hath played thee.
1,000 thanks, good sir. We meet again on this spot in an hour or so. I shall be a bridegroom then, and your worship will wish me joy. Until then, farewell. I'm ready, good fellows.
He is a brave fellow, and it is a pity he should die. Now, how to find him a bride at such short notice? Well, the task should be easy!
Rapidly, river, run it rapidly into. shall we please you? We can rhyme you couplet, triolet, quatrain, sonnet, rondelet, ballad, what you will. Oh, we can dance you saraband, gondolet, carol, pimpernel, or jumping Joan.
Let us give them the singing farce of the merry man and his maid. Therein is song and dance too.
Aye, for the merry man and his maid.
I have a song to sing, oh.
Sing me your song, oh.
It is sung to the moon by a lovelorn loon who fled from the mocking throng. Oh, it's a song of a merry man moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady. Heidi! Heidi, misery me, lackadady, he sipped no sup and he craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
I have a song to sing, oh.
What is your song, oh?
It is sung with the ring of the songs made sing that love the love life long. Oh, it is sung of a merry maid, peely proud, who loved a lord and who laughed at the moon of the merry man moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady. Heidi, Heidi, misery me, lackadady, he sipped no sup and he craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
I have a song to sing, oh.
Sing.
It is sung to the knell of a churchyard bell and a doleful dirge ding-dong. Oh, it's a song of a popinjay bravely born who turned up his noble nose with scorn at the humble merry maid peely proud who loved a lord and who laughed aloud at the moan of the merry man moping mum whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
Lady,
lady, misery me, lackadady, he sipped no sup and he craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
I have a song to sing, oh.
Sing me your song, oh.
It is sung with a sigh and a tear in the eye, for it tells of a right and a wrong. Oh, it's a song of a merry maid once so gay, who turned on a heel and tripped away from the peacock popinjay bravely born, who turned up his noble nose and scorn at the humble heart that he did not prize. So she bent on her knees with downcast eyes for the love of a merry man moping mum, who saw was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
Lady, lady, misery me, lackadady, his pains were o'er and he sighed no more when he lived in the love of a lady.
Hey,
hey, misery me, lackadady, his pains were o'er and he sighed no more when he lived in the love of a lady.
A kiss for that pretty maid.
Best beware, I am armed.
Back, sirs, back. This is going too far.
Thou dost not see the humor of it, eh?
Yet there is humor in all things. Even in this.
What is this harbor?
Sir, we sang to these folk, and they would have repaid us with gross courtesy. But for your honour's coming.
Away with ye! Clear the rabble!
Run away!
Leave us on!
Leave!
And now, my girl, who are you and what do you here?
May it please you, sir, We are two strolling players, Jack Point and I, Elsie Maynard, at your worship's service. We go from fair to fair, singing and dancing and playing brief interludes, and so we make a poor living.
You two, eh? Are ye man and wife?
No, no, sir. For though I am a fool, there is a limit to my folly. Her mother, old Bridget Maynard, travels with us, for Elsie is a good girl. But the old woman is abed with fever, and we have come here to pick up some silver to buy an electuary for her.
Hark ye, my girl, your mother is ill?
Sorely ill, sir.
And needs good food and things that thou canst not buy?
Alas, 'tis too true.
Wouldst thou earn 100 crowns?
Oh. 100 crowns? They might save her life.
Oh. Then listen. A worthy but unhappy gentleman is to be beheaded in an hour on this very spot. For sufficient reasons, he desires to marry before he dies, and he hath asked me to find him a wife. Wilt thou be that wife?
The wife of a man who I've never seen?
Why, sir, look you, I am concerned in this, for though I am not yet wedded to Elsie Maynard, time works wonders. And there's no knowing what may be in store for us. Have we your worship's word for it that this gentleman will die today?
Nothing is more certain, I grieve to say.
And that the maiden will be allowed to depart the very instant the ceremony is at an end.
The very instant. I pledge my honor that it shall be so.
Oh, 100 crowns.
100 crowns.
Oh, for my part, I consent. But it is for Elsie to speak.
How say you, maiden, will you wed a man about to lose his head? For half an hour you'll be a wife, and then the tower is yours for life. A headless bridegroom why refuse? In truth the poets tell, most bridegrooms ere they marry head and heart as well.
A strange proposal you reveal. It almost makes my senses reel. Alas, I'm very poor indeed, and such a sum I sorely need. My mother, sir, is like to die. This money life may bring. Bear this in mind, I pray.
A general rule of life, I don't allow my promised wife, my lovely bride that is to be, to marry anyone but me. Yet if the fee is promptly paid, and he in well-earned grave, within the hour is duly laid, objection I will waive. Yes, objection I will waive. Temptation, oh temptation, were we ever intended to shun what station your fascination splendid? Oh, for whenever we view you, head over heels into you, head over heels, head over heels, head over heels into you.
And so, good fellow, you are a jester?
Aye, sir, and like some of my jests, out of place.
I have a need of such a one. Tell me, what are your
qualifications for such an post?
Oh, marry, sir, I have a pretty wit. I can riddle you from dawn of day to set of sun, and if that content you not, well on to midnight and the small hours. Oh, sir, a pretty wit, I warrant you, a pretty, pretty wit.
I've jive and joke, and quip and crank,
for lowly folk and men of rank.
I ply my craft, and know no fear, but aim my shaft at prince or peer, at peer or prince, at prince or peer. I aim my shaft and know no fear. I've wisdom from the east and from the west, that's subject to no academic rule. You may find it in the jeering of a jest, or distill it from the folly of a fool. I can teach you with a quip if I've a mind. I can trick you into learning with a laugh. Oh, win all my folly, 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 and you'll find a grain or two of truth among the chaff. Oh, win all my folly, 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 and you'll find a grain or two of truth among the chaff. I can set a braggart quailing with a quip. The upstart I can wither with a whim. He may wear a merry laugh upon his lip, but his laughter has an echo that is grim. When they're offered to the world in merry guise, unpleasant truths are swallowed with a will. For he who'd make his fellow, fellow, fellow creatures wise should always give the philosophic pill. For he who'd make his fellow, fellow, fellow creatures wise should always yield the philosophic pill.
And how came you to leave your last employ?
Why, sir, it was in this wise. My lord was the Archbishop of Canterbury, and it was considered that one of my jokes was unsuited to his grace's family circle. In truth, I ventured to ask a poor riddle, sir. Wherein lay the difference between his grace and poor Jack Point? His grace was pleased to give it up, sir. And thereupon I told him that whereas his grace was paid £10,000 a year for being good, poor Jack Point was good for nothing. 'Twas but a harmless jest, but it offended his grace, who whipped me and set me in the stocks for a scurril rogue, and so we parted. I had as lief not take post again with the dignified clergy.
But I trust you are very careful not to give offence. I have daughters.
Sir! My jests are most carefully selected, and anything objectionable is expunged. If your honor pleases, I will try them first on your honor's chaplain.
Can you give me an example? Say I had sat me down hurriedly on something sharp.
Sir, I would say that you had sat down on the spur of the moment.
I don't think much of that. Is that the best you can do?
It has always been much admired, sir, but we will try again.
Well, then. I am at dinner, and the joint of meat is but half cooked.
Why then, sir, I should say that what is underdone cannot be helped. See, it was underdone.
I see. I think that manner of thing might become somewhat irritating.
At first, sir, perhaps. But use is everything, and you would come in time to like it.
Well, then, we will suppose that I caught you kissing the kitchen wench under my very nose.
Oh, under her very nose, good sir. Not under yours. That is where I would kiss her. Do you take me? Oh, sir, a pretty wit, a pretty, pretty wit.
The maiden comes. Follow me, friend, and we will discuss this matter at length in my library.
I am your worship's servant. That is to say, I trust I soon shall be. But before proceeding to a more serious topic, can you tell me, sir, why a cook's brain pan is like an overwhelmed clock?
Enough of truce to this fooling. Follow me, friend.
But Just my luck. My best conundrum wasted.
"'Tis an odd freak for a dying man and his confessor "'to be closeted alone with a strange singing girl. "'I would fain have espied them, but they stopped up the keyhole. "'My keyhole.
"'Wilfred, and alone.
"'Now, what could he have wanted with her? "'That's what puzzles me.
"'Now, to get the keys from him. "'Wilfred!' Has no reprieve arrived?
None. Thine adored Fairfax is to die.
Nay, thou knowest that I have naught but pity for the poor condemned gentleman.
I know that he who is to die is more to thee than I, who am alive and well.
Why, that were out of reason, dear Wilfred. Do they not say that a live ass is better than a dead lion? No, I don't mean that.
Oh, they say that, do they?
It's unpardonably rude of them, but I believe they put it in that way. Not that it applies to thee, who art clever beyond all telling.
Oh, yes. As an assistant tormentor.
Nay, as a wit, as a humorist, as a most philosophic commentator on the vanity of human resolution.
Truly? I have seen great resolution give way under my persuasive methods. In the nice regulation of a thumbscrew. In the hundredth part of a single revolution lieth all the difference between stony reticence and a torrent of impulsive unbosoming that the pen can scarcely follow. Ha ha! I am a mad wag.
Thou art a most light-hearted and delightful companion, Master Wilfred. Thine anecdotes of the torture chamber are the prettiest hearing.
I am a pleasant fella and I choose. I believe I am the very merriest dog that barks. Aha, we might be passing happy together.
Perhaps, I do not know.
For thou wouldst make a most tender and loving wife.
Aye, to one whom I really loved. For there is a wealth of love within this little heart, saving up for... I wonder who? No, by all the world of men, I wonder who. To think that he whom I am to wed is alive and somewhere, perhaps far away, perhaps close at hand. And I know him not. It seemeth that I am wasting time in not knowing him.
Now, say that it is I. Nay, suppose it for the nonce.
Oh.
Say that we are wed. Suppose it only. Say that thou art my very bride, and I, thy cheery, joysome, bright, and frolicsome husband, the day's work being done, the prisoners all stored away from the night. Thou and I are alone together, with a long, long evening before us.
It is a pretty picture, but I scarcely know it cometh so unexpectedly. And yet, were I thy bride?
Aye, wert thou my bride?
Oh, how I would love thee.
Were I thy bride, then all the world beside were not too wide to hold my wealth of love. Were I thy bride, upon thy breast my loving head would rest as on her nest the tender turtle dove. Were I thy bride, this heart of mine would be one heart with thine, and in that shrine our happiness would dwell. Were I thy bride, and all day long our life should be a song, no grief nor wrong should make my heart rebel. Were I thy bride, the silvery flute, the melancholy lute, when night out hoot to my low whispered coo. Were I thy bride, the skylark's trill were but discordant shrill to their soft thrill of wooing as I woo. Were I thy bride, the roses sigh were as a parent's cry to lullaby such as I'd sing to thee. Were I thy bride, a fair
No, they're not. Not yet. The Lord, how she wooed me. I should be no mean judge of wooing, seeing that I have been more hotly wooed than most men. I have been wooed by maid, widow, and wife. I have been wooed shyly, timidly, tearfully, joyfully, by direct assault, by suggestion, by implication, by inference, and by innuendo. But this wooing was not of the common order. This is the wooing of one who must needs woo me if she die for it.
The deed is so far safely accomplished. The sly boots, how she wheedled him. What a helpless ninny is a lovesick man. He is but a lute in a woman's hands. She plays upon him whatever tune she will. But the colonel comes, he faith, he's just in time for the yeoman parade here for his execution in 2 minutes.
My good and kind friend, thou runnest a grave risk for me.
Ah, tut, sir, no risk. I'll warrant none here will recognize you. You make a brave yeoman, sir. So, this ruff is too high. Here's your halberd, sir. Carry it thus. But the yeoman come. Now remember, you are my brave son, Leonard Merrill.
If I may not bear mine own name, there is none other I would bear so readily.
Now, sir, put a bold face on it, for they come.
Again.
Leonard, 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 Leonard
prisoner taken, and debarred from all escape, faced with gallant heart unshaken, death in most appalling shape.
Then the battle faced his battle, death in most appalling shape.
Truly I was to be pitied, having but an hour to live. I reluctantly submitted, I had no one alternative. Oh, the tales it unrelated of my deeds of daring do have been much exaggerated, very much exaggerated. Scarce a word of them is true, scarce a word of them is true.
They are most exaggerated, not at all exaggerated.
Watchful guardian, eagle-eyed, and when she feels, as sometimes she does feel, disposed to indiscriminate caress, be thou at hand to take those favors from her.
Be thou at hand to take those favors from her.
Yes, yes, be thou at hand to take favors from me.
To thy fraternal care, thy sister I commend. From every lurking snare, my lovely charge defend. And to achieve this end, O grant, I pray, this boon, O grant this boon. She shall not quit thy sight from morn to afternoon, from afternoon.